show.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Of course. And our purpose, DJ, of course, is to have guests on that are business owners, entrepreneurs, people that are really movers and shakers in the Albuquerque business community especially. And in keeping with that, let's introduce our first guest.
All right. Our first guest is no secret to Albuquerque. He's pretty well known in the community. He's actually the managing partner of Turquoise Trail Releasing, which his name is Kenneth Segura Knoll. Welcome, Kenneth, today. We're really excited to really hear about some things that you've been doing and really get to know you and into our audience.
Well, thank you for inviting me to this morning.
You're welcome. Well, I'm really interested because I know that you're a founder and director also of different things like Sacramento Festival of Cinema in the past from 95 to 2000. And then also, you know, you're really involved in the film industry. Can you share with us what your current activities are and what you're doing now?
Sure. First of all, I'm a native New Mexican born in Las Vegas, New Mexico. And my first exposure to film was an extra in Easy Rider. And that kind of sparked my interest in the motion picture industry. Was part of Governor Cargo's incentive program, went on to move to Hollywood and actually built a film studio in Sacramento, California. When I returned to New Mexico, my goal was to produce television and film productions and media productions. And I've been doing that for the last 10 years. Have multiple projects. Turquoise Trail Releasing is a distribution company. We just rolled that out 6 months ago. We have a TV pilot that we're working called Almost American. We have about seven other projects on the board that we are working. Just got back from the National Association of Television and Producers Executives and sold three shows. We're not ready to announce where they're going to be, but we're ready to do it. But part of producing is a great need to raise money. And when I moved to New Mexico, there was a lot of talk about money being available, but it never materialized. So crowdfunding was a very popular way to raise monies for film. So I decided that we were going to create a crowdfunding portal called investnewmexico.us. And at the time, I was focusing the crowdfunding on film and television. When the new governor came in, I met with Secretary Barella, and he said, can you focus beyond that? And I said, what are the three areas that you'd like us to focus? One is film and emerging media, which I know well. The other is energy and environmental companies. And the third one is tourism. And that's an area, those are the three areas that we feel there's a potential for economic growth that will hire local people.
Our guest is Kenneth Knoll. He is obviously a producer, an entrepreneur, and involved in crowdfunding and many entrepreneurial revenue streams and initiatives. So did I hear you earlier say Easy Rider?
Yes.
So was that 1969, 1970? That was a...
68, it was released in 69.
That was at Nicholson?
Oh, and Jeffrey, I got to add something. No, that was Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper directed
and
it.
And he actually came here. You know, I actually interviewed him in his home before he passed away about, 8 years ago with Senator Eccles,
right.
Former Senator Eccles. But I found out why they picked New Mexico for Easy Rider.
Okay.
It was because Dennis Hopper came across from California on his motorcycle. And as he was going through the Taos, he actually got lost and ended up in Taos and fell in love with it and said, this is where we're going to film.
Right.
Is that not awesome?
I always confuse that particular movie for whatever reason with Five Easy Pieces. I don't know why I confuse the two. Five Easy Pieces was a renowned film in 1970, I think, with Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson.
And
also.
Dennis Hopper and Peter Fonda were Easy Rider. Okay.
And I had Dennis Hopper was shooting here and had breakfast with him many times over.
Nice guy.
And very nice guy. We had great conversations about being an independent. That was the beginning of the independent film movement.
Wow. Right.
Because it was the first financed out of the studios, independent director Dennis Hopper. So he was a big supporter of independent filming. And, I have a history in New Mexico in filmmaking, and I want to continue it.
Thank you again for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We're a business radio program on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria with Bank of the West, and my co-host is
DJ Heckes with Exhib It.
And thank you, DJ, for partnering with me on all of our ABQ Connect Now radio initiatives, but also all of our live Radio Connect Now business events. Thank you.
Yes, and well, I'm so excited to talk about some upcoming ones. Is this a good time?
Let's do it.
Hey, let's do it. Hey, February 25th, you only got a few days. Make sure you RSVP. We have an AM event. It's a live event, and it's absolutely free. February 25th from 8:30 to 10 in the morning at Bravo Restaurant at Uptown Albuquerque. You can call 604-9081. Also, I'd like to kind of share with you, if you have not entered for the Best Local Brand, the contest application process ends February 26th. If you've got a great brand and you want to let people know it and you feel people will vote for it, be sure to enter. It's absolutely free. And how it works is you go to exhib-it, that's exhib-it/B2B. That's the letter B, the number 2B. Go ahead and fill out your application. They're all judged by the American Marketing Association, and the top three winners for commercial and nonprofit will be unveiled the first week in March, and let the people's choice start on the voting. So, Jeffrey, I'm really excited because, you know, that's something about staying local, grow local, thrive local.
And you're very humble, DJ. The B2B Expo is actually the single one-day largest networking event in the state of New Mexico. I believe last year, collectively, we secured almost 500-600 guests. So
693 to be
exact.
Like
I said, nearly 700 guests. So our upcoming B2B Expo, if you're in business, you should be at this event on April 26th. We'll be providing more information as the radio program unfurls. So getting back to you, I was watching a Columbo episode the other night. Victor Izé, a famous local actor, was one of the guests. And I was thinking about Victor. And he was actually also in Billy Jack. And as you know, Billy Jack was a kind of a cult film in the 60s or late 60s, 70s. That was filmed exclusively in New Mexico, right?
Yes,
were you involved in any of those projects at that time, or you were probably a young man?
I wasn't involved, but I knew they were shooting in Santa Fe, and I went over to watch. You know, once I saw the filming process, I was hooked. So anytime there's a film anywhere in New Mexico, I made it a point to be there and watch it.
I want to talk about crowdfunding, but before we do that, because that's a standalone topic, the film industry, we hear about it all the time as just folk that live in Albuquerque, but talk a little bit more in depth about what is happening as a producer with film. I know we have the studios, we have infrastructure, we have a lot of support mechanisms, but you were saying funding is still an issue. Why don't you talk a little bit about film in Albuquerque and New Mexico?
Well, what the state has been very good at is building the crews, what we call below the line. But it's not progressed enough to where we can fund our own films. So what we call above the line, the directors, the producers, they really don't live here. So the films come in and they leave. What we want to do is we want to finance the films here so that all a larger portion of the money stays in New Mexico. Filming is, I always call it, when a movie comes in, it's like the circus. You know, they put up their tents, they do what they're going to do, they shoot it, they move out of town. The largest part of the filmmaking is the editing and the financing and the whole process that happens there. And so that's what we're trying to build in New Mexico. Now, the other part that's happening is that television series are better fit for New Mexico because they stay longer and they hire more people and there's more money in the economy and there's a greater chance also of hiring local people for those above-the-line positions. We just shot a sitcom. And two or three people from our production have moved over to Night Shift, which is great, you know. So now we get a full time, and it becomes an industry in New Mexico. But key to it is financing. The industry is also there. There's a lot of productions that are now $3 million and under. So for producers like myself, it's easier to raise $3 million. Once we get above that, then you have to bring in a lot of partners, and it gets very complicated in finance.
So when you say editing, that's post-production?
Post-production.
What would it take if you were waving a magic wand to provide this post-production infrastructure or that mechanism in Albuquerque? What does that take, or what would it take to bring post-production to Albuquerque?
Projects that stay here.
Okay.
We have a very, very good crew post-production personnel in New Mexico. Sony came in and they were doing special effects. A large number of those people stayed. That's what we've also learned, is that we have a lot of people that came in on projects and they stay here because they love New Mexico. And now they're trying to get work that's here in New Mexico. A lot of us fly out. I do work in L.A. quite a bit, but we want to shoot them here.
The preponderant post-production, does it still take place in Hollywood?
In Hollywood.
Okay.
And part of it is, you have to understand, as a director, I may be working on editing a film, but now I'm working to find my next project or planning the other project. So I have to be there where that process happens. If that's happening here in New Mexico, then you're here. We have, like, as you know, we have Almost American, which is the television project I developed. We're negotiating with Norman Lear right now to come in as an executive producer. That would give us enormous credibility. As you know, Norman Lear's
all in the family.
Yeah, I met him at NAT at the conference, and he was very much interested in our project.
So he's about 82.
He's 93.
Wow.
And he's amazing. He was going up and down that conference. Quincy Jones was there. Ellen DeGeneres, on and on. There was a lot of people there. But, you know, we have a good future.
So let's talk a little bit for our audience. Let's explain how the film industry works. I know quite a few years ago, even before Governor Martinez, we had our prior governor, and he would bring the film industry here, and, you know, it was very political. And we were really growing. I think we were number one or two in the nation. How do you feel it's going now with attracting producers? Because, like you said, New Mexico is beautiful to film in, and we've had quite a lot of movies filmed here. Tell our listeners, explain to them what it really takes to get a movie here, and all the work, the before and the after.
Well, first of all, the first film incentive program was in the 1970s with Governor Cargo.
Wow, and I didn't know that.
At the time, we had multiple films. Now, back then, we didn't have the incentive program that we have now, which is the rebate program. The rebate program is probably the most attractive in New Mexico because it is a rebate program. Also, they call it a tax credit, but it's a rebate program. So as a producer, if I produce something in New Mexico, I get a 25% rebate for a film and a 30% rebate for my television series. For me as a local producer, and if I hire local people, that money's going to stay in New Mexico. Right now, it goes back to L.A. But to answer your question, a film starts off with a producer basically who has an idea to take a script, a story idea, a news idea, a book, multiple sources, and convert it and make it into a film. And like, I call myself a serial entrepreneur, because that became the buzz in the Bay Area. But producers are serial entrepreneurs. Every time we start a film project, it's like starting a new business. It is literally, we set up a corporation. We have to set up books. We set up all the elements to do this corporation. Then we buy the rights to the story, or we commission a script. And when we take that script and we put it through what's called the development process. And in the development process is where we attach the producers, the directors, what we call above the line. And in that process, you're also involved in financing it. Now, the attracting of financing is a game, really, because the better people you put in place in the development, the more you can attract money to the project. Okay, so you might have heard the term green light. So we're waiting. What happens is once it's in development, you're waiting for a green light. Once a project's been green lighted by the producer, that means they have all the elements in place, including the financing, to go into production.
Our guest is Ken Knoll. Welcome again to ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria, along with
DJ Heckes.
If you'd like to attend one of our events or meet any of our guests, give me a call, 604-9081, 604-9081. So in the parlance of movie making, you got executive producers, key grips, gaffers. I mean, all these kind of odd terminologies. Not everybody understands that. So is an executive producer the person that actually finances the movie, and a producer the one that actually owns the rights to the movie? Define some of those terms in the vernacular of movie making.
Sure. Usually you get a term executive producer is a producer that comes on board that is there to protect the money of, or to protect the source of money. So if a studio comes in, they'll assign an executive producer to the project who oversees the making, watches their money, basically. The producer, there's different kinds of producers. There's the producer who puts the whole project together, which is the business element. And then there's a line producer is who's in charge for the day-to-day operation of the production. And so there's multiple producers. You'll see associate producers. Everybody comes on board based on their relationship with
and
all
the directors
the
involved with the aesthetics of it, the actual artistic crafting of the
actual.
The
director is the auteur.
Okay.
But well, so once you get it in development, you go into production. Artists don't like this term, but a movie is a manufacturing process. And at the federal level, it's considered a manufacturing, So that's when you get to the process of manufacturing this project that you're doing. And that's when you bring in all the skilled technicians and the artists. And there's a lot of parallels to land development and real estate development in movies.
Right.
And when I talk to investors, I always put it in a parallel. They're very similar, and they understand, and then they can.
Well, that's a great point. It's like I've produced a product, I have a patent on it. It's now it's
right.
done. Now I got to distribute the product.
Right.
So distribution's a whole different mechanism, right? That's the post part of the whole.
Right.
Now we got the film. Where do we distribute it? Who's our audience and all that?
Right. So and a film is basically like a rental property or a lease property, a real estate property. You're leasing that film to exhibitors. Now, the exhibitor may be a theater, it may be a television network, it may be Netflix, it may be – now, there's multiple sources of revenue streams that project has to use to get all its revenue for your investors and to make a profit. Films very seldomly make a profit in theaters because the margin, the profit for the producer is very little. But the great advantage of a theatrical release is that the promotion and the advertising that you get out of it bleeds over to the other sales of the other markets.
So when you're producing a project, do you have in mind the end user right away? In other words, when you're doing this project that thank you for having me involved in, I'm an
Right.
American, did you have in mind, well, I want distribution ultimately to be TV or Netflix or theater? Do you have that in mind as you're
Yes.
creating the project?
Yes, and you also have a niche market that you need to make sure that you secure support from that niche market. So when you're planning it, you're identifying who that niche market is, how you're going to exploit that niche market. There's no better advertising than word of mouth. If I have a project that my niche market love it, they go out and they tell their friends, and the friends go watch it, and it goes. And so the word of mouth is the greatest advertising in our market. So social media has become the new word of mouth. So that's where small producers like myself, now we have a level playing field with a lot of the majors because they use social market, we use a social market. but it this cost is the same. So the playing field is also has leveled off quite a bit for productions. For example, at NATP, it was a seller's market. I mean, the buyers were scrambling all over the places to sign content immediately. And if you had a finished project, we had three projects that were finished. They got picked up immediately. It was, you know, and they weren't there to talk about future projects because they needed projects now. They needed inventory now. Remember, film and television is inventory. So the parallels for the entrepreneur is very the same.
You're the first person that's ever really framed it as a manufacturing kind of a process, which is really very prudent of you to do. I think our listeners appreciate that. You're right. It's a product and it's manufacturing.
And in New Mexico, we now have a tax credit for manufacturing that applies to film and television for our investors. So we're putting all these elements together to get the investors to invest in. And the vehicle that we're using is equity crowdfunding.
Wow, that's so neat. You know, speaking on the other side, the actor's perspective, my son is a paid SAG actor here in town, local. Ryan Jason Cook, and I know he was in, like, The Last Stand, and he was also in The Scorch Trials. Too bad that movie didn't do as well. But it's interesting that you spoke on the royalties, because when you're a paid actor and you're in a part, even if you have a speaking line or more, those royalties go on and on through TV, through DVD rentals, everything. So doesn't that also attribute back to the producer for some of that credit, too, and he has to disperse all that?
What happens is I always say that a movie, the life of a movie is 5 to 7 years. The first year you're making the film, and this is after you raise the money. First year you're making the film, second year you're selling the film. So year 3, 4, 5, 6, and then it kind of tails off, is you're selling it to the different markets, and that's where your royalties come in. So each market has what we call a window. So, for example, I license a window for six months for pay television. After that, I can sell it to another market. Every time a market buys it, we have to pay royalties based on our union agreements or whatever side agreement that you've cut with the talent.
So, Ken, let's get back to the financing. I always ask this because I'm in banking. Let's say I finance your film. Does that mean I have artistic license to make to provide my input into the project? Can you? How does that work? In other words, sometimes when you're financing a building, that person now becomes a board member and fires DJ because he doesn't like her, because now I have the right to do that. So talk about how that affects the actual artistic aesthetic piece, the financing piece to that project.
Now, see, it depends where the financing is coming from. For example, if the financing is coming from a studio or from L.A., they do have creative input.
Like MGM is known for that. Golden Mayer would come in and say, I don't like Joan Crawford, get her the hell out of here, and da-da-da. So that's one mechanism.
Right.
That's one instrument.
Right. The way I finance projects, they don't, because they're coming in strictly in as limited liability partners, and they are in it for the investment. We're very – one of the things, like building a building, you have to buy a bond. You have to buy errors in omission and all those insurances that protect them from something that I do wrong. But the creative part of it, we keep with our own organization. In fact, even with Norman Lear, that's a conversation we're having right now, as to how much input and creativity do we want to give him in this project. We want it because he has a great...
So when I write a book, it falls under copyright auspices.
Right.
When you create a project, what auspices does it fall in terms of protecting the actual artistic licensure stuff, if you will? Where does that fall?
A book is copyrighted.
Only if it's registered.
Yeah, but where does it fall in film?
A movie is copyrighted. The music is copyrighted. So each has its copyright and its owners. So I'm licensing the book to make into a movie, but the actual movie itself has its own copyrighted, and that ownership is to whoever who put up the money for it.
Okay. So you've discussed filmmaking in New Mexico. We're all happy and all that, but you're saying above the line, there's still some absences there. So where do you see filmmaking in New Mexico in 3 years on a Thursday? I'm just asking you to extrapolate what your thoughts are. Will we still have the Better Call Saul projects and the Breaking Bads and all that? And if so, that's good. But do you see us having more of the above-the-line dynamic?
Right. Yes. As long as we have the incentive program, we'll have the other outside but we will – there's multiple projects that I know of that are being developed right here within New Mexico that have legs. You know, they have much interest, producers that are local, directors that are being hired, and but we're also attracting outside directors. I have a director who is moving to New Mexico and plans to live here who has large credits, and so he's bringing projects here himself.
And because of that critical mass that he or she has, do they also have access to capital and financing because of their credibility?
Well, yeah. Again, when you're packaging it, your investor wants to know what's going to make this a success. A strong resume.
And they look for past success,
right,
to project
right,
forward.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And a strong resume.
Just like banking. We look at your backward. We don't look at your forward.
Right.
Because in banking, everybody comes over with their projections. Nobody cares. We want to know, what did you do in the past
right,
3 years?
Right.
Okay, very interesting.
Well, that's fascinating. So, you know, we don't have much time left. What can you tell our audience of what you see in the future, how you see us in the film industry, and how we're going to keep New Mexico on the radar?
Well, crowdfunding is very important to this. The 2012 Act, Jobs Act, provides now that you can use crowdfunding to get equity investors for your project. So now I have the ability to reach out and bring in equity investors using crowdfunding with our tax credits and all the other elements. And the Title III part of the crowdfunding means that everybody can invest. So now the way we're going to package films and television will be almost like a stock market, but you'll be investing in film projects using crowdfunding.
So if I understand that right, you know how you see all the credits after a movie? So now we're going to start seeing crowdfunding, and maybe with hundreds of names on that long credit list.
Oh, no. You'll see the LLC company that financed it.
Gotcha.
Once again, Ken, thank you for being a guest. Any final thoughts? We've got about 20 seconds here.
Crowdfunding. You're about to the movement for equity crowdfunding. I saw a report this morning that equity crowdfunding last year provided more money into businesses than venture capital.
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We'll be back after these messages.
Did you know that only 50% of your marketing dollars actually work? That's right, just 50%. Which 50% is working for you? Are you tired of wasting money and not reaching the right target audience through your marketing dollars? Exhibit can help you get noticed through design and print of corporate branding, marketing one-sheets, brochures, and trade show displays. Marketing has changed, and the way to reach your target audience is changing. If you want to grow your business and work with a reputable and well-known company, be sure to call now and talk with one of our marketing and Exhibit experts, 828-0574. That's 828-0574. Or visit us on the web at exhib-it.com. Again, exhib-it.com. Exhibit, it's New Mexico's leading provider of marketing, design, and printing, and portable, modular, and custom trade show displays. Proud sponsor and co-host of KTBL 1050 AM ABQ Connect Now Business Talk Radio Show on Saturdays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Welcome back, Albuquerque business listeners. Welcome to ABQ Connect Now. This is our second segment. Thank you for tuning in every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria along with
DJ Heckes with Exhib It.
And again, folks, we have guests like Tom Garrity. We had Ken Knoll on. They're influencers in the world of business, in the world of community leadership. And with that, let's get right to it. DJ, our next guest.
Our next guest is not only I consider as a friend, but a prominent business owner and a very resourceful person in Albuquerque, Tom Garrity of the Garrity Group. He founded his business in 1997. It's actually a full-service public relations firm with clients with presence in New Mexico. He provides strategic counsel, public policy advisement, media relations, crisis communications to the public and private and nonprofit and government entities. Welcome today, Tom. We're really glad to have you.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.
You know, I'm really excited because I see your name all the time. Of course I should, right? In PR, public relations.
Well, only on the good list, hopefully. It's sometimes there's, you know, public relations has one of these things that either, you know, people like you or they might have some issues. And so if they have some issues, those are the kind of clients that we like, because the more complex, the better in public relations, because we always love to be able to problem solve.
You know, and that's so important. You know, speaking of problem solving, I think you guys even reinvented yourself about 6 years ago. Everybody does. Rebranding, right?
Yeah, we did. You know, we've had the opportunity to be in New Mexico for about 18 years. And during those 18 years, you kind of figure, you know, you get into a rut at times, right? And so about 6 years ago, our team went into a strategic planning session, and which is really, you know, it's like the shoemaker's children have no shoes. Well, we were doing great barefoot, right? And so we brought in some strategic planners from out of state, folks who really didn't have a vested interest in, you know, what we were up to here in New Mexico and stuff. And that turned out to be very positive for us, because we got a really objective third-party perspective. And through that, we identified a couple of different things: our mission, vision, values, which are really key. They're just things you put on the side of the wall. But they also helped us to really identify and brand ourselves as being, I think, a firm of thought leaders. And that was through the development of our perception survey. And our perception survey is something that came out of that strategic planning session, which is a third-party survey that we work with research and polling. We pay full fare with them to really get New Mexico residents' thoughts on favorability of industries, who residents trust, and how they access news and information. And so we're into our sixth year with that, and so we have 5 years of data that we share with the public and with our clients.
So what did you glean from that? Because I'm actually writing a treatise on the anthropology of New Mexico and how colonialism has made us really anti-business for lots of reasons, because mm-hmm. we're a suspicious population
yeah.
under the Spanish rule, coupled with the fact that Catholicism, and this isn't a judgment on Catholics, but yeah. it tends to make people feel that prayer is a strategy instead of the Puritan ethic where you take industry and make action happen. So what did you glean from your from perceptions about the Garrity Group and your industry that you didn't know?
Yeah, well, it's and that's fascinating. I look forward to reading that, because I think that there's a lot of misperception sometimes about business, because we just think, oh, it's always been that way, so to speak. You know, when we first started our first year, specific to the PR industry, we measured 18 different industries, and including public relations. And public relations, when it came to you know, favorability, was down near the bottom with advertising. And but we found that a lot of people just didn't know what PR is. And so at that point, we started measuring 17 industries, because it's like, since people don't know that much about PR, you know, why focus that much on it? And so but what we gleaned from it is that in New Mexico, there are two truths. And I'm sure you've seen these come through. Blood is thicker than water.
Hmm.
You know, we trust our family, friends, and relatives. And then two is that small business is the most favorable industry in our state, and which is really, you know, something that that we help our large corporate clients to really understand, saying, you know, when it comes to out-of-state corporations, national banks, or other major corporations, New Mexico residents just don't embrace those. Residents would in New York or California or Texas. New Mexico is very unique along those lines, and really embraces more of the small business around the state more than any other state there is.
That's very in keeping with that thought. Colonialism tends to, and of course I'm extrapolating a great deal from that, but when you're under colonial rule, you tend to be suspicious of institutions and monarchies and things like that. So when a big bank comes into town, you have this inferred sense. I learned a long time ago, facts are negotiable, perceptions are not. And you probably know that as a PR guy. That's why we need to talk offline.
Facts are negotiable. I don't know about that.
Absolutely. You can inundate somebody with metrics and facts all day long.
Okay.
But if someone has a perception about something, that's not going to change. It's going to be a lot more difficult for that person to change. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Interesting.
Sure.
Well, isn't perception, logic, and reasoning when it takes over after you get bombarded with the facts?
Absolutely not.
No.
Look at football. Football's popular for lots of reasons because it's tribalism. It's the Visigoths versus the Franks, and it's an irrational emotional attachment to a player or whatever. I don't want to go offline, but the point is you gleaned a great deal and you retooled yourself. And talk a little bit about how you did that. Once you got some of this feedback, how did you reposition yourself? Because I think that's an interesting insight for our listeners.
Yeah, so how we repositioned ourselves just through our mission statement, which was a lot longer than it is now. We've kind of, you know, you kind of create something and you go, does it really fit with us? And so as we kind of winnowed it down, it's, you know, we help small businesses to be heard and large organizations to be understood. And that's really what we specialize in. It says everything about our clients, whether it's a Balloon Fiesta, which is really technically a small organization. It only has a full-time staff of 15, a volunteer board of 24. But that's a small organization. Makes a big impact in New Mexico, though. And then large corporations where we have the opportunity to work with groups like Comcast, as well as Ford and FedEx. So, you know, really helping them to bridge those connections to make a big company seem small is one of the areas that we specialize in and we're really good at. And so what we decided to do is instead of creating our own weather system by, you know, going vertical in the tourism industry or vertical in technology or on digital social media, we really wanted to have a focus on where we live. Which is New Mexico. And so our vertical is from a business perspective is really based on geography, which if you talk to a lot of business planners and stuff, they'll say that is just insane, which I tend to agree. I see it can be very limiting, but when everybody else is focusing on a vertical in one of those specific other markets and our vertical is just focusing on the state, you know, I see that as a win-win because we love New Mexico. We enjoy everything about it.
Thank you for listening to ABQ Connect Now. We're a business radio show. We're with you every Saturday on 1050 KTBL. I'm Jeffrey Candelari with Bank of the West, along with
DJ Heckes with Exhib It.
DJ, you want to talk about our live events very briefly?
I would. Again, just a few days left to RSVP for our next live ABQ Connect Now, absolutely free. February 25th from 8:30 to 10 a.m. at the Bravo Restaurant, Albuquerque Uptown. You can call 604-9081. Also, the B2B event, save the date, April 26th. But I'm really happy to, you know, get those applications in for the best local brand. Remember, the applications only are accepted through February 26th. You can go to exhib-it.com/B2B.
Very good. Our guest is Tom Garrity. He's with the Tom Garrity Group, and I agree with DJ at the outset. Tom is a renowned and locally very credible PR guy. I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it because I'm just not that way. But you have a really credible, and I'm saying that out loud, I guess you say brand. Yeah, you have a really, and it's your name, by the way, that's even bigger than your firm. You know that. So what do you attribute that credibility to? Because there are a lot of PR firms, well, relatively speaking, and yours tends to be one of the more preeminent ones, at least in terms of the perception in the marketplace. What do you attribute that to?
I'm very humbled by that. And I guess, you know, and thank you very much for those kind words. I think by really providing our clients, you know, just – raw advice. We're not going to pull punches. If something is not looking good, then we're going to say it's not looking good. But more importantly, here's how you fix it. And you know, we've had the opportunity to really help a lot of organizations and a lot of people through a lot of very difficult times. And we've had a lot of times to, you know, really help them to celebrate as well. And so I think, you know, just being available and being there and being involved in the community is maybe some of the things that we've done with that.
Congruity with that statement, one of the things we pride ourselves on with this show is it's not a nonsense show. There's not, you're going to hear a lot of cliches. We tend to be raw with our guests because we want real insight. I'm not going to sit here and say you're a great guy if you're not. I'm going to say I'm going to challenge you on that. Not you, but whomever you are. Mm-hmm. And we're known for that on this show. It's not cliche. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what gives us distinction. Would you agree with that, DJ?
I do. You know, and also I've known you for years, Tom, in the community. We're both business owners here. And, you know, you're a very humble man. You know, I really feel people know, like, and trust you because of your integrity, your honesty, and your reputation. It stands alone.
Well, thank you. You know, we have a great team. You know, through the years, we've had the opportunity to really, really grow a number of different public relation practitioners who, you know, some are, you know, continue to remain with us. Amanda Molina is vice president. Lily Casada is one of our new rising stars. She has brought a different perspective with respect to the Hispanic market and how to reach New Mexico residents that we couldn't, you know. I like to hire folks who are experts in areas where I'm not. Because you know there's a lot of stuff I just don't know, and so I got to surround myself with the folks who do. And when we look at you know folks like Julianne Horn, who's done tremendously well with Comcast, Jonathan Gideon, who went to do great things with Home Depot. Susan Wilson, who's a great practitioner. You know, I just like to celebrate that, you know, here are folks who are really embrace what public relations is. And to them, it's a way of life. And it's really a passion, and you can't shape, you can't reshape somebody's passion. It has to be coming up from within you. And
it sounds like you're really working in your why factor.
Yeah, could be, yeah.
In your
yeah.
business, mm-hmm. and your employees are too.
They are.
On the buy-in. You know, I really like a couple things that you said. I really feel that you're taking and you're putting it out there, what's in it for them and the voice of the customer. You are the voice.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you know, I'll do when I think it's a lot of us as communicators do this as well, is we just sit down in an initial client meeting. I just listen. I mean, if I'm talking within the first, you know, 30 minutes, an hour, there's something that's wrong because, you know, I just like to hear what their brand is, what their issues are. And you can't do that just by talking. You really have to listen. You have to identify. I think the one thing that a lot of organizations in New Mexico don't do well is identify who their target audience is. And because from that stems, you know, streams all other strategies, right? And so that's one thing is knowing your target audience. The other is knowing really, and this is really more of our job as communicators, what the difference is between a tactic and a strategy. You know, we've seen so much focus on digital media. And digital media is like traditional media. It's a tactic. You know, it's something that we leverage to get exposure to our target audience, but it's not a strategy. And I think a lot of times some organizations figure, well, if we just have X number of likes or X number of followers or visits to our blog or listens to a podcast, we are influencing the community. And that's not necessarily the case.
You know, and a lot of people get confused. There is a mm-hmm. huge difference between PR, public yeah. relations, oh, yeah. and marketing.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And I know because I do marketing,
yeah,
and you're
you
PR, and
yeah.
I respect what you do. It is hard.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Can you explain to our audience the difference?
Well, you know, let me start off with advertising and public relations. Advertising is what you say about you. Public relations is what others say about you.
When you're not in the room.
When you're not in the room. Hopefully it would be ideal. We live in a society, right? Wouldn't it be great if everybody just said, here's what I really feel about you in person, right?
Yeah.
So public relations is what other people say about you. And then marketing is how you get them to care. How you engage that product. But, you know, since that's your area, I can't really engage it. I feel like I'm talking about the Super Bowl and, you know, my team's not in the game. So, you know.
You know, and it's interesting. Really, marketing is when it's repeated three times also. You know,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
When other people repeat it.
Yeah. And so. The real estate industry used that because they took it over. They said it's all about location, location, location.
Mm.
Again, thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect. Now I'm Jeffrey Candelaria along with
DJ Heckes.
Our guest is Tom Garrity with the Tom Garrity Group. PR, yeah, that's a great point. Marketing is how you position a product to a particular audience, knowing your competition, is it priced right, all of that, understanding threats. Again, that's a very complicated world in and of itself because people use marketing and advertising interchangeably, and they're not necessarily always the same thing. Public relations we don't think about because in the final analysis, it's what do people think about me and or my product secretly or when I'm not there? And that's so important because that's retention of your client. That's letting other folks know about your client or product or service. So how do you then, when you meet a client, how do you, after you've done all the listening, do you have a protocol? Do you have a, how do you kind of customize, here's a proposal to bring you a little bit more of a positive position in the mind of the marketplace?
Yeah, great question. You know, when we're working with the small business, for example, or whether it's a large corporation, our process is always the same. It's not commoditized, but it's the same kind of approach. It's the same approach that we all use in you know, just when it's making a buying decision, for example. It's research, planning, execution, evaluation. Different industries have different approaches to it, but for us, we really believe that research is the foundation. You know, you don't know what you don't know. Right. And so if you research and you find out, you know, who your target audience is and what moves them, who do they trust? What are the things that motivate them to make a sale or to make a buy? Those are the types of things we identify in research. We also identify competitors. We identify a number of different factors that in the market that could influence how people are perceiving your particular organization. Then we get into the plan, where we really put out, as we say, here is exactly what we want to be able to accomplish, but more importantly, it's measurable. Because when we jump over the execution phase and we talk about the evaluation, when it's all said and done, what's really going to determine if this approach is a success? And it all comes down to sales a lot of times, right? People, if they want to be liked, they'll just give away their services for free. but it really comes down to sales. And so we build in the evaluation into our approach, into our plan. And then, of course, the execution is the one thing that everybody in the industry really loves. And I enjoy the execution, too, because you get to see the plan come through fruition. But I'm really more of the planner and the strategist. But of course, who doesn't like a great event or seeing something come through?
You know, let's tie that into how do you feel New Mexico residents really make their buy-in decisions?
You know, it's about who they trust. And I think, one of the ways that I think we can look at this, right, is remember many years ago when Cottonwood Mall, and gosh, well, talking about raw conversations, right? So
oh, wow.
when Cottonwood Mall first opened up, you had all these other restaurants that were opening up out there, right?
What was that, like 92, 93?
Could be, yeah.
Somewhere
I think it was back when
94?
I had lighter hair, yeah. you had this restaurant move in called On the Border, which was classic Tex-Mex, is probably one of the greatest misjudgments of marketing that I've seen in a long time. And On the Border, while it's loved in Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, it totally failed in New Mexico because they totally missed the market. They didn't understand what New Mexico residents love in their food. And so as a result, I think On the Border did more to help the small New Mexico eateries than any other marketing ploy they could have done because people knew what they did not like.
Yeah. It's interesting. When I worked at the Hispano Chamber as our marketing director for 20 years, raised millions of dollars in corporate sponsorship. So 1995, I'll never forget this. I won't mention the name of the business, but they're a big, well-known communication provider, ubiquitous presence in the world, called me up and said, hey, we want to do a $20,000 sponsorship to the Chicano Chamber of Commerce. And I said, okay, first of all, that's not the term used here necessarily in business. So then they send me the money and they send me this big package, and it was all Latin this, Latino this. Another thing, I responded back, the word Latino just is, for whatever reason, not used in this marketplace.
But the in word, Texas, it is.
Exactly. The point, though, is to Tom's point, it was a cookie cutter approach that didn't work. So.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, we actually send back $20,000 because their whole messaging system just wasn't congruent with the way we digest information as the Hispanic business population in Albuquerque.
Well, and that is really, I mean, that goes to the integrity, your integrity and the integrity of the Hispanic Chamber, because it shows that, I mean, in essence, somebody gives you a sponsorship, you're endorsing them.
Absolutely.
And you're saying, this is, you know, we agree with the way that they're approaching things. And clearly, they had a huge mismatch.
Absolutely.
They did not research the market. And we sometimes will run across clients that have that perception. And we say, well, tell you what, before we go down that road, let's kind of, you know, take you around Albuquerque so you can get to know what Albuquerque really is.
Right.
And it's hard to do that in just a day or two.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd say almost impossible. But you can really talk about the different communities in New Mexico and in Albuquerque in that short amount of time, just to let them know that a little bit more research is needed before you think you can just come in and use a, you know, and try and be successful with a cookie-cutter approach.
Absolutely.
So, Tom, you know, 18 years ago, right? You've been in business.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you got started and why PR?
Well, my background is in television news. And so I spent 10 years traveling around the country. Had a lot of great news opportunities, local level, national level, and ended up in New Mexico because I was really more of a Westerner at heart. And so as I, you know, transitioned out, my first daughter was about to be born, and I thought, I have to find a more regular way to make a living. And so one thing led to another, and I made the had the great opportunity to join the Albuquerque Convention and Visitors Bureau as their director of communications. And then that's where I probably learned, kind of the real world about advertising, marketing, PR, because, you know, you had a convention sales, tourism, membership, and a CEO at the time who each had their own marketing agenda and their own public relations agenda, communication. So my goal at that point was to coordinate it all. So then I started up my company with them as a client in 1997, taking what I've learned, still helping the tourism industry. And really that's how we how the firm got started, was that as a tourism group by, you know, working with the Balloon Fiesta, working with the State Fair at the time, and then helping Roswell to get known as a UFO alien destination. So
and you did a good job on that, because I was in Italy last year, and everyone knows Roswell.
Yeah, and again, that's another fact versus perception reality. Mm-hmm. If you provide facts, there is an interesting, I guess you'd say, incongruity with the reality of that supposed crash in July 1947. So when you worked at ACVB, this has always been a frustration of mine.
Mm-hmm.
As an Albuquerque guy, been here since 1680 through the Candelaria family, whatever. Albuquerque means white oak, by the way. I don't know. I don't think we've done a good job of knowing how to position our city. We got the True campaign, ACVB every 3 years, reinvents a new campaign. You've seen that chilly kind of silhouette. Mm-hmm. And there's a skyline inside of it. Have you seen that?
I will say no.
Okay,
but,
good.
So.
And I had some Eastern friends come in, and I don't want to tell you what they thought it looked like, but it didn't look like a chili. So some of this isn't necessarily – have we done a good job, I guess, collectively of coalescing who we are? Like when Texas, you know, they're big and bold and brash, we kind of know that everything in Texas is bigger. I don't know if that was by design or whatever, but
yeah,
I don't know that
was,
we've
yeah.
done a good job of saying to the tourism convention industry, this isn't about you, but who we are. Have
yeah.
we? Do you think – what are your thoughts on that in,
you know,
in that regard?
And my colleagues, we have gone round and round on this because, you know, I first off, I don't think New Mexico – and this is going to sound, you know – real Homer kind of approach, but I don't think you can brand New Mexico any one particular way. Texas, I think you can brand. Okay, California, I think they've done a great job in branding. But when you look at how really, truly diverse New Mexico is, let alone Albuquerque, I don't think you can just put one flavor, you know, one size fits all on it. I'm surprised that you left out, though, the Hispano Chamber of Commerce that markets to Mexico and South America.
And the Indian populations throughout the country. Native American markets.
And so you have, you know, you really have all these different messages and messengers. And I think it's okay to have these different messengers, you know, because everybody's going to connect with something. We could, you know, I think some days I think we could probably all unify under more of a greater umbrella for the greater purpose. But where we get the conversation mostly is when we're, you know, I'm talking about Breaking Bad. Okay. Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul. you know, and then, you know, there's some different political items as well, which I won't necessarily get into. But, you know, we think, well, people know about us because of Breaking Bad. And somebody says, well, you know, at least they're thinking of us. And, yeah, we're a little bit quirky. And, you know, we're a little bit bad, but as people kind of look into a little bit more, they'll really get the whole story. So sometimes it's not necessarily what starts the conversation, but the fact is it gets to marketing, is that people are talking, and they're talking about Albuquerque. And I think that, you know, while everybody seems to have a different approach, I think it's okay.
That reminds me of the old adage used to be used years ago. You know, as long as I'm in the paper, just spell my name right. You know,
yeah,
that kind of
P.T. Barnum. Yeah. You know, he also said never follow kids or animals too. So
I'd like to see us tie in diversity. I'd like to have us come up with something that's memorable. You know, like the city that never sleeps. Everyone knows it's New York. What stays in Vegas? You know, what stays in Vegas? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows it's Las Vegas, Nevada. We just need to figure out how to tie in all of these great things we're doing into one message and one theme. But, yes, it's difficult because we are diverse.
Yeah. I mean, let's just look at northern New Mexico for a moment. I mean, actually, let's look at northern New Mexico and southeast New Mexico. One of the things we know through our perception survey is that, you know, people have different perceptions based on where you are in the state. And even just looking at our state, you have Taos and Santa Fe. Okay. Couldn't be two more different places, right? And then you look at, you know, just maybe closer to Taos is Farmington. You know, some people would say, why on earth, what is going on in Farmington? Who would, you know, that's just a great way to get to Durango. And then you have folks in Roswell who go, my gosh, we would just love to shed this alien kind of thought and stuff. And so, you know, you have all these different locations that are so unique to New Mexico that I don't know if there's really a great way to put a single brand on it.
Well, I would disagree. I think there's a way to do it, a galaxy of differences or something. I mean, you could have a mega kind of a macro kind of a thing. But I think your point is well taken. Even in the legislative world, you've got Albuquerque versus the rest of the state.
you do.
You've got that dichotomy. Yet we're all still hopefully celebrating the same some of the same policies that would be good for all the state. Again, agrarian versus urban. So you've got those dichotomies. So that, you know, that that is a good point. But we've only got a couple of minutes left. Tom, do you want to kind of touch on something we hadn't talked about that that might be insightful to our guests that we haven't touched on?
You know, just one is that, you know, in this day of, you know, people are going to the internet more and more to get news and information. And one of the things that our survey has shown is that New Mexico residents, really, they flock to digital media, but they don't necessarily trust it. The thing that New Mexico residents trust more than anything else is just the conversation amongst friends. We always do every couple of years, we throw in a question to find out who New Mexico residents trust. And they trust conversations more today than they did 2 years ago, more than they did 5 years ago. And so what I think that means is that perhaps there's a saturation that's coming with the digital age and with traditional media, and that it's really coming back down to those front porch conversations that we have. And I think that's really where our success will be as marketers, as communicators, is in that face-to-face communication.
And making it personal and human.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think with these technological smartphone things, they serve a grand purpose, but it does sort of dehumanize relationships to some degree, because you don't read the haptic behavior, the nonverbal cues, all of that, and those nuances. Most communication actually happens in those spaces. Very good. Thank you again for tuning in, and thank you, Tom, for being a guest on ABQ Connect Now. On behalf of ABQ Connect Now, good business.
Did you know that only 50% of your marketing dollars actually work? That's right, just 50%. Which 50% is working for you? Are you tired of wasting money and not reaching the right target audience through your marketing dollars? Exhibit can help you get noticed through design and print of corporate branding, marketing one sheets, brochures, and trade show displays. Marketing has changed, and the way to reach your target audience is changing. If you want to grow your business and work with a reputable and well-known company, be sure to call now and talk with one of our marketing and Exhibit experts, 828-0574. That's 828-0574. Or visit us on the web at exhib-it.com. Again, exhib-it.com. Exhibit, it's New Mexico's leading provider of marketing, design, and printing. and portable, modular, and custom trade show displays. Proud sponsor and co-host of KTBL 1050 AM ABQ Connect Now Business Talk Radio Show on Saturdays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Listen online at 1050talk.com. 1050 KTBL, Los Ranchos de Albuquerque.
A Cumulus Media Station.
Justice at rest, another decision day. I'm John Irving. The longest-serving member of the Supreme Court, Justice Antonin Scalia, is being laid to rest following a Catholic mass in the nation's capital, presided over by Scalia's son, the Reverend Paul Scalia.
We give thanks that Jesus bestowed upon him 55 years of marriage.